This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervy.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world. On KABC.com, I am Alan Gervy. Thank you.
It's an international show.
It is an international show, and they even hear the show in Canada,
where
I will be leaving for tomorrow.
Our neighbors to the north.
And you were almost in Canada last night. They wouldn't let you in. So if you ever think of going to Canada, they are not going to let an American in. I am Canadian. I can get in tomorrow. I hope to be able to enter the country. And yes, I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And I'm still here to manage your life, at least for another day until I leave for Canada.
We're so lucky.
No, you are not. I will tell you, and I don't want to waste a lot of time talking to you, Lauren, although I really enjoy it.
We have a huge guest.
Well, he's not huge. He's slight in stature. I mean, he's a strong guy, but you're talking about reputation and
correct
and successes in life and law. And there is a big difference between being a successful lawyer and being a successful person. And this man has been successful at both. So that's really something to look forward to for this hour. And I want to tell you that we have had so many guests. In the last 8 years, we've had so many guests on, lawyers, non-lawyers alike. And Genevieve Wong, our producer, says that our guest today is one of her top 10 favorites. Top 10 favorites.
That's saying a lot.
That is saying a lot because we've had...
She's
talked to a lot of you. Jerry Spence, F. Lee Bailey, who unfortunately passed away a few weeks ago. Alan Dershowitz. Last week we had Gloria Allred on. Ben Braffman, Burt Fields. So many preeminent attorneys and figures in our society. And this man has made it in the top 10 of Genevieve Wong's favorite human beings. And I want to introduce him. Do you mind, Lauren, if we just get right?
No, let's get to it.
You don't want to just do some small talk for a while?
Okay. I'm awful.
Well, you've had a tough night. You've been traveling all night.
So
the New York Times has called our guest, and I haven't said who he is yet, but called him one of the most powerful divorce attorneys in the U.S. And we've had a lot of powerful divorce attorneys on. Laura Wasser's been on many times, as well as other divorce attorneys. But this lawyer handles a lot of high-profile, high-net-worth dissolutions. His clients have included people like Christie Brinkley, James Gandolfini, Uma Thurman, Tommy Mottola, Michael Bloomberg.
Mm.
Yeah, a lot of money there. Marla Maples, Chris Rock, Ivana Trump. And presently, he's been in the news for representing Melinda Gates, the wife of Bill Gates, and now Connecticut Senator Alex, or former Connecticut Senator, she's resigned, Alex Kasser. He's the author of Reconcilable Differences, 7 Essential Tips of Remaining Together from a Top Matrimonial Lawyer, and it's published by Simon & Schuster. It was in 2002. Still a big favorite, and people love the book. Adjunct professor at law in Pennsylvania School of Law, where he had this course, Anatomy of Divorce, which so many people wanted to take. His biography has been included in Who's Who in America, Who's Who in American Law, and Best Lawyers in America. Senior partner at Cohn, Clyer, Lyons, Greifer, Thorpe, and Rottenstrike. And if you can say that,
I was gonna say,
you become a senior partner. You know, it's such an honor today to have with us Robert Cohn. Bob, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Thank you so much for having me. We're in the middle of a storm in New York, so let's hope we get through the next 20 or 30 minutes successfully. Good to be with you guys.
You know, you sound fine, and I'm actually traveling out, as I said, to the East Coast, and I'm expecting rain, and I know it's been bad weather in New York, so maybe this will give you a chance to sit back, relax, talk a little bit about your life and about cases, and as you've said, you have given so many gifts to people, and it's a little bit of an oxymoron, gifts to people who are getting divorced, and we'll talk about that later on. But I do want to start off by talking about your background, because your father was he drove a taxi. Your mother was a housewife. You were the first member of your family to graduate college. And you look back and you've been so successful. What did you learn from them? There's so much to glean from parents who worked hard. You know, you didn't have the kind of resources, finances you have now, but you certainly got off on the right track. What did you learn from your parents?
I tell you, I learned that life is very difficult, and that if you want to work hard and you've got a decent mind, America is a great place, and you can be successful. My parents were second generation in the U.S. Nobody had gone to college. As you said, my father drove a taxi in Brooklyn, and they both knew that they wanted to be out of Brooklyn, and we lived in Coney Island. I could walk to Nathan's and get a hot dog.
You know, I just watched the hot dog eating contest on TV.
There you go. There you go.
So I can see what you were relishing.
It's a piece of Americana.
When you were walking to Nathan's.
And in any event, they always wanted to get out of Brooklyn, but they never could make it. So I was given this notion that you could do anything in America, and they gave me the ambition to do it. And I've been very fortunate. And also, you also have to be lucky. Timing is a very important thing in life, and my timing was very good to do what I did.
How did you get the opportunity to work with Roy Cohn, a controversial attorney, but by all accounts, a brilliant mind who was very involved with the Department of Justice prosecution team on the espionage trial of the Soviet spies Julius and Ethel Rosenberg and the McCarthy Times. And you worked with him for about 5 years. And you talk about timing. How did that happen?
So this was both a bit of luck and a bit of perseverance. I was an Army JAG officer after law school, and I decided that I wanted to go to work for Roy Cohn because I knew I wanted to be a litigator. And Roy, at the time, while very controversial, as you said, was an enormous talent. And those were the days when you had to put nickels and dimes in a coin machine to make a phone call from an Army base. And so there I was at the time stationed at, I think it was Fort Meade in Maryland, and I was putting money in phone booths and trying to get an appointment with Cohn, and I just never gave up. So that's the perseverance part of it. And finally, he said to me, "Why do you keep calling me?" And I said, "Because I can't think of anybody more that I'd like to work with in the world than you." And he gave me an interview. I went up to New York at the time, and he gave me a job. So that's the sort of the serendipitous and the lucky part of it. And I had almost 6 years with Cohn, and while I didn't agree with all of his politics, nevertheless, I got trained in part by a great, great trial lawyer and a great talent. So that was the start of my career.
What was he really like, though? I mean, you hear about all of these things, his lifestyle, and I even heard that he maybe introduced you to some of the, you know, some things in the city that you weren't exposed to. What was it like being with someone like that who, you know, just had a different lifestyle and did things that maybe you weren't used to growing up?
It literally opened doors for me, Alan, that I had never, ever seen before. I had never been in a building on Park Avenue in New York. My first interview with Cohn was at his apartment house at 1165 Park Avenue. Never been in a building like that. Never had anybody open the door for me. I lived in Brooklyn. I went into the military, got out, and that was my first interview. And I got into an apartment that had many rooms. We were four people in a bedroom when I was growing up, and there was everybody had their own room. And Cohn opened my eyes to another world, that one that I had never seen before. And I consider myself really fortunate to have had that experience. And I saw the first time in my life what the Upper East Side of Manhattan is like. And I'm sure you have listeners who find themselves in New York from time to time.
Yeah.
And they'll know what I'm talking about.
As a native New Yorker, I do know what you're talking about. you know, when you talk about Roy Cohn, it's so interesting to me how life unfolds, right? So you worked with him. He's the one that you wanted to work with. He, in turn, started working, you know, at some point with Donald Trump. And you end up representing two of Donald Trump's ex-wives in their divorces. I mean, what a unique string of events there. I mean, did you know Trump coming up too? And is that the connection?
Actually, the timing was a bit off. I left Cohen. It was the early 70s that Roy was introduced to the former president through his dad. Roy had represented Fred Trump, the president's dad, and that's how the introduction was made. So I never met the president before during the time I was at Cohen's office. I did meet him briefly after that in connection with my representation of Marla and Ivana.
And Ivana. Is that unique to represent two ex-wives against the same man? I mean, you must have experience going into it the second time.
Well, actually, I've run into that since then, but it was my
really?
First not with presidents, by the way, but
okay.
with just ordinary wealthy people. But yes, it was the first experience that I had two ex-wives. And he was not the president at the time, but
sure.
He was a very important figure in New York before he left New York and relocated to Florida.
How do you assess someone when you hear so much about them from one side? Does it necessarily color your thinking about what kind of man, for instance, just using Donald Trump as an example, what kind of man he is from hearing what his wives tell you? Obviously, attorney-client privilege to the degree that it is not disseminated to the public. But how does that affect your impression of people like Donald Trump?
So I've been doing this for a while, and I have a filter. And when I hear a story for the first time, when I meet a prospective new client, I hear the story from his or her point of view. And I have my own filters, and I know what the issues are. I know what may not be exactly accurate, but is the way the person that I'm talking to sees the issue. So I sort of work through it. In a rare instance, and I will say it's a very rare instance, where people have had therapists, I wanted to talk to the therapist before I became engaged as their lawyer to find out, get some history about the psychological history of the person, if I think that's going to become important in a case. But that rarely happens. I think I have enough of a filter to get through what is real and what somebody thinks is the situation.
We only have a minute before we take a break. Is it difficult to work with some of these people? Are you turning them down? I know you've been on record as saying that billionaires and very wealthy people have difficult schedules to work with, and sometimes it's hard to get access to them. But are there people who you just can't work with?
There have been two people that I can remember. One was an important movie actor. And briefly, I had a trip to Italy, and I had left a number for him to reach one of my partners in case there was an emergency. And he didn't want to talk to one of my partners, and he found out where I was in Italy. He called me in the middle of the night and said, I need to talk to you. Who the fuck is, excuse me, bad language, who the hell is so-and-so? And I said, he's my partner, and I need him to talk to you. And I said, we're the wrong fit for each other. And that's the only time it really happened that way.
Yeah, who was that?
I worked through it.
Who was that?
I don't want to say.
I'm just kidding. I knew you wouldn't. But, you know, as a lawyer, we always, always experience that. And it's unfortunate. But I know that the number of people who you become endeared to and who you enjoy working with far outnumber those people. Bob, we have to take a quick break. We've got lots more to talk to Robert Cohen. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, Lauren, to the left. That was your request.
I mean, it's a breakup song.
It's a breakup song.
You know.
And it's funny you should say it's a breakup song. Robert Cohen wrote a book called Reconcilable Differences. not irreconcilable differences. And it was has been so well reviewed. Here's a couple of examples of people reviewing Bob's book, Reconcilable Differences. This is one of those books that changes the way you see things forever. A clear-eyed analysis of how couples function and don't function over long-term relationships. An absolute must-read, in my opinion, for anyone serious about something that lasts or didn't have good examples growing up or that it is in a troubled situation. Another reader writes, an excellent explanation of the causes of conflicts in relationships, how they cause damage, and ways to understand and minimize their toxic effect. The work of this author does is life-changing. Mm. This book will allow you to see your relationship problems from a new perspective, a hopeful lens, and gives practical options for dealing with these problems. I cannot recommend this book more highly. Now, Bob, you have been called a killer, a Doberman, your worst nightmare, but also this warm and thoughtful person who has been divorced himself 2 times and makes his living from divorces. Yet you write this book on staying together. What gives?
So before I answer the question, I want to thank you and Lauren for both having me on. I've known of your program for years and was hoping I'd someday get invited. So I feel honored to be among this small group of people.
Of course.
Wow.
You're right at the top of the list.
It's a short list, too.
So the answer to your question is, when I wrote the book, there was a big question, was I ever going to have to put a going fishing sign on the door of my office because business was just going to dry up. Well, not surprisingly, that never happened. But I did get a sense, and I had been in the business. I wrote that book some 25 years ago, probably. And I did get a sense by then that there are, I identified seven problems that people had in their marriage. And I thought that those seven problems, if people could work through them, they could get through them. So infidelity was an issue that I often came across, and it's very hard to get over it, but it's not impossible to get over it. Addiction is another issue, which is almost impossible because of the incredible number of recidivists who will become addicts, and so on. And I identified these in the book and worked through them as my perception has been and was at the time, of how people can make it better. And I think it's worked out. By the way, the quotes you gave me, I had never seen. That I just heard on the radio. I had never heard, and they're terrific.
I have to tell you, Bob, when Alan Dershowitz was on and he said to me, you know more about my life than I know about myself.
Those quotes are brand new. In any event, the book was a pretty big success. And I had lunch last week with somebody in New York who I had represented a long time ago, and he remarried, and he said, I've read your book, and I read it over and over again, and this marriage is working. So those are all really
wow. Nice
things to hear. And I can tell you that the people haven't stopped calling me, and business is just fine. I have no complaints. But if we can save a marriage, you know, the nice thing about my life is people look at me and say, how do you do this? It's such a tough business. It's such a dirty business. But one of the things that I think about myself is at the end of the day, I'm giving a lot of people a new life. And that new life is getting them out of a bad situation, if it's truly a bad situation, and giving them an opportunity to restart their life, to perhaps have a new family, and it can work. And so I smile sometimes when I think about all those people who have restarted their lives after my representation of them, and other divorce lawyers as well. And living the good life, so to speak.
One of your most, biggest named clients, Chris Rock, has been really open about his divorce and going through it. He's mentioned you. Excuse me.
You get all choked up about Chris Rock.
I get emotional. But he has a great quote about you because he was commenting on Melinda Gates, who is currently going through a divorce, and you are on her team there. And he said, put it this way, people get divorced, people fight, things take sometimes years. At the end of the day, you're only talking 4%. one way or the other. Cohen said that to me. I was like, oh, okay. And that put it in perspective. What does he mean by that 4%?
So let's talk about the issues that we fight about. We fight about custody if there are young children. We fight about wealth and the split of it and the distribution of it. That's another big issue. And there may be others, but those are the two big issues. And generally, when good lawyers are involved in negotiating a settlement before people go to court, the difference is somewhere around 4 or 5% of where one lawyer is and the other lawyer is, both with respect to time with the children or with respect to money.
Oh, I see.
And so when you think about it that way, nobody thinks their life is going to be over. You know, they're not going to lose their kids forever. They're not going to lose all their money. When you think about it in terms of a relatively small percentage, it doesn't make a difference. Am I going to see the kids 5 times every 2 weeks or 6 times or 7 times
I
every
see.
2 weeks? Just the differences are relatively
small. Are negligible,
small.
Right.
Yes.
But I want to ask you, Bob, the billion-dollar question, and that's the tough one. You make so much sense when you say, especially in your book, you talk about remaining together and, you know, strategies to stay together. And then you talk about, it's, I guess it's a dichotomy when you start talking about the gift that you can give people for a new life when they are divorcing. So here's the billion-dollar question, and I say billion because that's more familiar to you than most divorce attorneys. How do you know when you should stay together and when you are going to give these people a gift of a new life? Isn't that a lot of pressure on you?
It's a lot of pressure. I tell you, one of the early questions I ask a client is if they're intimate with their spouse. And lots of people aren't. But some people are. And I always have a sense that there is intimacy and romance in their marriage, notwithstanding the other issues. There's something to save.
Mm.
So that's, to me, that's the starting point. If they continue to be intimate, notwithstanding the issues, maybe a marriage counselor might help. Maybe just sitting and talking to me for an hour and saying, look, you're not ready yet for a divorce. Why don't you go home and try to work it out? You know, you got 2 young kids. It's going to be an awful situation at the beginning for you. You're not going to be used to it. You're going to be alone. And sometimes it works. So that's the dichotomy. And those people that go back, sometimes they don't stay back, but sometimes they do stay back. So that's the good part of it. And those that get divorced get a new life. So I think you could have a new life after meeting a divorce lawyer and going back, or you can have a new life because you get divorced. I think those are two good endings.
You know, it's interesting, Bob, when you say you have 2 young kids, you bring that out. What do you do in a situation when you are focusing on the kids and your client perhaps just can't stomach the impact that a messy divorce would have on the 2 young kids? How do you deal with that?
Alan, that's such a good question because that happens with some frequency. You know, people are in a polluted, corrupt marriage perhaps, but they just can't live with the idea that they're going to be separated and not see their kids every night or put them to bed or have breakfast with them. It's very difficult. I will tell you, I've been divorced. I had kids, teenage kids at the time I got divorced. They're doing fine. I have terrifically successful kids. I'm in a new marriage, which not new. It's 23 years now, but so it's a long marriage and a very happy marriage. So that's worked out for me. And I think most people, kids get used to it. You know, 50% of the people are getting divorced in America today. The kids in there next to them sitting in class has a parent or parents getting divorced. So it's not such a foreign concept today, and kids get used to it. And I try to explain that to people. It's not the worst thing that could happen.
Even though the parent may not get used to it, even if the kids do get used to it.
That's correct. That's exactly right. The kids get used to it, and they get used to shuttling back and forth. I remember living in a hotel when I separated. My kids loved it. They would call room service. They thought it was really a cool thing to do. So, you know, you move on with it, and you figure out how to work it out.
And I like what you're saying because you're talking about focusing on the positive. It doesn't all have to be negative. When you talk about some of the experiences you may have had with your kids as a single father, that may have been something very special in their lives and your life that is...
It wasn't mine. I got to spend a lot more great quality time with my dad once my parents got divorced. You know, when they were together, I barely saw him much. But then when it was our time to be with him, he was all with us. You know, we got him all to ourselves. So it was a great thing.
Well, there you go. You just got your evidence. Bob gives us the argument and we get the evidence right here. We have to take a quick break. This is really fascinating. I know a lot of people are interested in hearing these issues, especially from an expert. And we got more to talk with Robert Cohn after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Baby, come back. We are back. We're speaking with Robert Cohn, who is the senior partner at Cohn, Clare, Lands, Greifer, Thorpe, and Rottenstrike in New York City. If you're just joining us, Bob Cohn has been called one of the most powerful divorce attorneys in the U.S., and his clients have included a lot of very wealthy and powerful people, including people like Christie Brinkley and James Gandolfini and Ivana Trump, Chris Rock, Michael Bloomberg, and Melinda Gates, a fairly recently new client, as well as Senator Alex Kasser. We're going to get to some of those people in a few minutes. But, Bob, I have a specific question because before the break, you were talking about kids and you were talking about how well your kids have done. And congratulations on that, because I think credit goes to the parents for that, especially from divorcing parents. I had seen somewhere where you said that your situation was pretty good because you and your ex-wife allowed each other to see the kids whatever they wanted at any time. You could see your kids and vice versa. I guess the question I have is, how realistic is that when there is anger and frustration, maybe competitiveness, uneven emotions between divorcing spouses, to be able to have that kind of arrangement in the best interests of the children?
So I think it is unusual to have that, and I think it's tough to have it. We were fortunate in that we didn't get along on a lot of things, but we got along about the kids, and it was never an issue. I was running marathons in those days when I got separated, and my kids lived off of Fifth Avenue in New York, and I used to run up to them early in the morning. They would walk the dog, and I'd walk the dog with them for 5 or 10 minutes and run back to the hotel that I was staying at. And that kind of thing is not common, but if people can get along, there's no reason. The kids never were under the pressure of who are they going to see, do they have to be home exactly at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or and so on. So it worked out, but I think you're quite right. It is very difficult to accomplish.
Go ahead.
No, especially if the people are angry at each other, or the cause of the divorce was an infidelity with a friend, or something that really needles at somebody very badly.
You know, it's interesting because I was just going to hit on that where there are these emotions, you have to give advice. And it's hard to do. I know Laura Wasser has said on the show that, you know, if one of the spouses is a vegetarian and they find that the kid has been given a hamburger from the other spouse, that, you know, why go crazy about it? Why make a big thing out of something that is not a huge thing? And to learn to be able to get along for the children. But that's not easy for you as an attorney when you hear this anger and frustration from your client, for instance, or from the other divorcing parent that doesn't allow for some kind of rationality and reasonableness.
Look, Laura Wasser is a terrific lawyer, and I think she's right. If you can talk people into passing over the notion that they had a hamburger when they're want them to, the kids want to be vegetarians. You just got to get over it. There are some issues, though, that relate to food intake and issues relating to problems that kids have with allergies and that you have to be very careful. So, you know, it's not one kind of subject fits all on these kinds of issues. But I will say if parents can get along, the kids are far, far better and will grow up far, far better. And that's certainly been the case in my situation. My kids have grown up. They're adults now. They have kids, and they're great parents. And so there they are. They saw their parents divorcing, and nevertheless, they're great at their jobs, which is whatever they do professionally and as parents.
You know, you have so many clients who have so much money, more money than most of us
can. God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I realize you can't talk specifics of, you know, you're representing Melinda Gates and her divorce. But when you have clients that have that much money, are they just like the rest of us? Do they nickel and dime each other over things just because there's, you know, emotions involved, even though they probably will both walk away with more money than any of us could know what to do with?
So I think the answer is probably yes, except the numbers, the nickels and dimes are tens of thousands
right.
and hundreds of thousands.
Millions.
So they're not nickel and diming each other. They're hundreds of thousands of dollaring each other.
That's a good phrase.
Right.
But I think yes. I think the answer is yes. I think even the wealthy, not all, by the way, certainly not all. I mean, some people say to me, make a deal and let's get finished with it. It's not going to change my life because it doesn't change anybody. It shouldn't change anybody's life except with respect to the children. So financially, it's not going to change anybody's life. So make a deal. I want to get on with my life.
Right.
And that's a very, very professional view of it, and it's a very adult view of it. But not everybody can do that. So sometimes we get into the petty squabbling about a picture that's hanging over the fireplace or a particular antique that becomes important or something along those lines.
You know, Laura... Lauren mentioned Melinda Gates. I'm not talking about her specifically, but there has been some coverage of this, a little bit of coverage of this pending divorce. And there was an issue regarding prenup agreement versus separation agreement. Not asking specifically about the Gates, but tell us what the difference is and which you would say is more advisable or how you work with prenup versus separation agreement.
So, most people who come into a marriage with wealth or with the expectation of wealth will want a prenup. Either their families will want a prenup, which is their parents or grandparents, or they will want a prenup. It's a second marriage, and they've made a bunch of money, and they want a prenup. And to people in that position, a prenup is a very wise thing to do. We do probably 50 a year at my firm. Because it outlines what the end result is likely to be, and that the end result becomes the separation agreement or marital agreement, which you refer to. But a prenup reduces certainly substantially the number of financial issues. Now, that doesn't mean you can't fight about what a prenup means, and particularly in California, you're in a community property state.
Yeah.
What is the community property in New York? We're what's called an equitable distribution state. So we fight about how the percentages should be from an equitable point of view. But a prenup is certainly a wise document for anybody who has wealth or the expectation of it.
And a separation agreement?
That's the end of the day. That's what you do when just before the divorce, and that's the agreement that you reach. And often it will incorporate the financial terms of the prenup. Sometimes it won't. But often it will, so that there's less acrimony and less dispute about what the economics are going to be. You know what it is going into it. And I will tell you also, there's more and more people doing what's called a postnuptial agreement.
That was my next question.
Okay, so a postnuptial agreement is an agreement between a husband and wife. While they're married, they're having issues with the marriage, often financial issues, and they execute a document called a postnuptial agreement, which will define what they will end up with in the event of a divorce. So they're planning to stay married to each other, not get divorced, but should they get divorced, the parties will know where they are financially. And that is a good thing in many cases because it takes away the fear of how much it's going to cost somebody or how much they're going to get or how they're going to live. And so we see more and more postnups and people coming in to talk about them.
You know, we have to take a break. There's so many questions that we have, especially related to this. But I have to give a little tease. I'm going to ask you, you represent, and don't answer this right now, but you represented Watermelon. And I want to ask you after the break who Watermelon is and why you represented a watermelon. And I know you're chuckling right now, but hold on to it. You listen to Gurry's Law. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. No promises. Sounds like a formula for divorce. But we are talking about, let's put a positive spin on this, Lauren, as Bob Cohn likes to say, the gifts that he can give to people, even if they have to get divorced. And by the way,
Silver linings.
Bob Cohn is not simply a divorce attorney, although he's known as one of the most powerful divorce attorneys in the country. How do you represent people like Melinda Gates and all these very wealthy people? Well, you also understand corporate law, estate law, tax law, partnership law, commercial law. And as Bob alluded to before the break, there are some complex business dealings that he, as the attorney, needs to understand. Bob, when you look at some of these people, and don't worry, we're going to talk about watermelon in a second, but tell us how you developed this ability to understand these other issues that are so important in what you do with very wealthy, high-powered divorces.
So I was fortunate in that I wasn't a divorce lawyer at the start of my career, and so I was litigating commercial cases, and as a result of my general litigation experience, and I tried cases in the federal and state court in all kinds of business areas and commercial areas, even tried a criminal case in the Southern District in New York, and I got to learn enough about the other subjects that I often come up against, so that I had a starting point, and we divorce lawyers today, in a practice like mine, it's a complicated business. You know, we have to know how to read financial statements. We have to understand how partnerships work. We have to understand taxes. I have three partners who are CPAs, who started as accountants and CPAs before they became lawyers. So we have tax abilities at the firm. And I touched a lot of the subjects, so I know what I know. And I know what I don't know, because I've been in the middle of so many commercial disputes before I became a divorce lawyer. So I think that's a big plus in my practice. We used to think of a divorce lawyer as somebody with a Polaroid camera sitting outside of a motel room,
right,
you know, waiting to get somebody's picture who shouldn't be coming out of
right,
the hotel room. But that's all gone. We have no-fault divorce in every state in the United States now. And the reality is that what we do is we break up big mountains of money, hopefully, and figure out how to split it up and also deal with the important and sensitive children issues.
And as you said, it may be the biggest business deal that one of the divorcing spouses will ever make in their life.
Yeah, and it may be both, by the way. Even the very wealthy who are going to lose maybe close to 50% of their net worth, it probably is the biggest business deal they're going to be.
Right.
So it becomes so very, very important.
So Lauren's looking at me now saying, Alan, how does a watermelon get divorced? Maybe you can explain this to Lauren.
Yeah, that's so funny. But so picture New York. It's 98 degrees, and it's a July day. And I get a call from a famous public figure. And it's probably, in that case, it was the first time he had talked to anybody. It was a he. He talked to anybody about a divorce. And it was this hot July day. And, of course, when I get a call from a public figure, since I'm the first person he's talking about, we have to watch out for confidentiality. And as a result of being of confidences, we need to give a code name in my firm. I can't let people know who I'm talking to, and I have to run a conflict check. We have to make sure the other side hasn't called us. So I have to put a name in the system. I put the name in the system. I clear the conflict check, and I give it a name. Watermelon came as a result of my assistant asking me just before the call whether I wanted some fruit on this hot day. And I said, why don't you get me a piece of watermelon? And as a result of the call, the name of that case became Watermelon v. Watermelon.
Oh, that's funny.
And it went into our system as Watermelon.
Oh, that's great.
That is so funny.
That's great, yeah.
You know,
it is very hydrating.
Did Melinda Gates have a code name?
I can't talk about that. There you go. Trying to come in the back door.
But I didn't ask anything about the divorce or what's going on.
I don't want to talk about it. Go ahead.
Can you say anything about Senator Alex Kassler's case, or is that too new and still in the works?
Well, it's new. It's in the works. There's a very interesting policy issue, and there's a state senator from Connecticut, Ms. Kassler, who was getting divorced, and she determined that she was gay during the marriage, and the issue is what effect does that have on the marriage, and it shouldn't have any effect on the marriage, and her seeing the kids and the whole lot of issues that we have to deal with so often today. Since the gay population is increasing, as we know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that first of all, that case has a little bit of everything in it. I mean, for a news junkie like myself, yeah. You know, you can read through and see, wow, oh, wow. But I was also thinking, you know, it's pretty recent that, you know, gays in America have been able to get married. And I wondered always if divorce attorneys were always rubbing their hands together in delight, because that's twice as many divorce cases.
I have to say, that was our first thought, by the way, after the same-sex marriage court made the decision. We thought, God, they're going to be running into the office. We're going to have to put enough reception rooms in the office.
There'll be wait lists.
To handle the crowds. It didn't happen. And they're marrying just like straight people are marrying. And by the way, Alex Kassler, the recently resigned senator from Connecticut, she's a terrific woman, and I'm so proud to be representing her talking on her behalf in connection with these important gay issues and kids and the like. But having said that, I haven't seen a big plethora of cases coming in on the divorce side from gays. Although they're getting married, we're doing prenups for them. Done a bunch of prenups in the last year for gay couples getting married. They do tend to stay together longer before getting married, because culturally they're just not used to getting married as the straight people are. But it's going to normalize.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes, Bob. Tell us what's next for Bob Cohn and what you can expect in your life and career. And, you know, it's fascinating. But where do we go from here with you?
So I'm glad you asked that question. I'm going to do it quickly. I think I'm doing cases all over the world now, literally. I mean, I did the Onassis case in Europe for the last living Onassis 2 years ago. I do cases in the UK. I lecture in Hong Kong. We're looking at going outside of New York to other jurisdictions. To possibly practice and find sound, competent, capable local lawyers, because we have a wonderful, wonderful group of lawyers that we've put together in New York that knows how to do these cases. So I think that's my next step. I'm vital, and I'm running, and I'm at an age now where lots of people are continuing to work, continuing to work hard. So and that's my feel.
And let me tell you this: of all the guests we've had, you can answer a question succinctly and to the point and do it so well. We have so many lawyers who have diarrhea of the mouth, and you ask, and these are famous, famous lawyers, well known. They can't answer a question without going off for about 10 minutes. So congratulations on that.
I think our listeners, thank you.
it just gets, you get more out of it.
Sure.
When you can do that. And that's why.
You guys are great. You know how to ask questions. I thank you so much for having me. And anytime you want me, give me a little warning, and you got me.
All the best.
So enlightening. Okay.
Thank you so much for spending the hour with us, Bob. That's Bob Cohn.
Okay.
Bye for now. All right.
Bye-bye.
Well,
bye-bye.
Wow. Bye-bye. That was an amazing hour.
It
I feel
really
like
was.
I could do another hour. And I don't know how much he'd charge us.
The first hour is free, but it's...
You know, I can imagine, and I didn't ask. I have asked Laura Wasser what a rate is. I wasn't going to ask Bob. But, you know, it's way up there. When you're representing billionaires, you know, you're talking to them. The hour that we spent would have cost us like $1,000.
Wow.
So I'm glad that we did it on the radio without having to pay.
That's right. And share it with all our listeners for free.
All right. You know, Lauren, we have a big show coming up next week.
Sure do.
Do you know who the guest is?
I was going to be surprised, but if you want to let the cat out of the bag, I'm happy to hear.
I think, and I could be wrong, and don't sue me if I'm wrong, folks, but I think it's Paul Anka.
Oh, really?
I think so.
That's exciting.
We're going from one of the greatest divorce attorneys in the country to...
Or maybe, to now internationally, as
to,
he let us
know. To one of the greatest singers. But I'm not sure. We're working on it, so I shouldn't let the cat
don't
out of the
tease.
Bag.
Tease.
I'm here to tease. That's what I do. I want to thank everyone for listening to Gervie's Law today. It was a great show. Feel free to check us out on Facebook or at gervieslaw.com. You can find all of our podcasts, gervieslaw.com. See you next week. Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you, Alan. Always a pleasure.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.